The show is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. And coming up on the show, we'll be hearing some live playing from three recitalists who are working together at the University of Illinois tomorrow night. Two of them are on faculty, Ian Hobson, piano, and horn player Bernhard Scully, and also a guest artist violinist who is Andres Cardenas, formerly concertmaster of the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. They're going to be doing some things for horn and piano, for violin and piano, and then the unusual combination of horn, violin, and piano. But there's a very famous piece by Johannes Brahms for that combination, which I think they're planning to sample for us on the program today. So that's coming up. But first, we have a professor of piano who is at the New England Conservatory of Music. He's being brought in by the Modern Greek Studies program here at the University of Illinois for a recital of contemporary Greek piano music tonight on the U of I campus. Both of these recitals, by the way, happening at Smith Music Hall. And Mr. Papadakis, Konstantinos Papadakis, is with us, and we'll be hearing various samples of his playing, including this one here on Live and Local. That was a performance by Konstantinos Papadakis here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, obviously, from a live concert. He is going to be playing tonight at 7:30 in the Memorial Room, which is on the second floor of Smith Memorial Hall on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana on 805 South Matthews. It's a program of contemporary Greek piano music, actually the title of the program, The Contemporary Piano 4, Impressions from Greece. And he is a guest of the Modern Greek Studies program at the University of Illinois. And he's with us here on Live and Local. And you'll have to tell us, what was the piece we just heard?
That was Manos Hadzidakis, a composer I'm going to play tonight, another piece of him. That was a conversation with Sergei Prokofiev of an early suite of his.
It sounded like a rather intimate, gentle conversation.
Yeah, and he's using harmonies by Prokofiev. He's based on harmonies by Prokofiev in that small piece.
And where were you performing on that occasion?
It was Jordan Hall a few years ago in Boston.
At the New England Conservatory, yes. Mm-hmm. Where you're a professor. How long have you been there?
Not even a year. I'm very new.
Oh, really? Yes. So you are brand new. So you're just kicking things off there. That's a pretty prominent place to start out. Or where did you start out?
I was 5 years, I was a Samuel Barber artist in resident at Westchester University of Pennsylvania.
Oh, you know, my high school chorus director went to Westchester. Mm-hmm. He was always singing the praises of Westchester.
It's
at
great.
The time
they
it was college.
Program.
Yeah, now everything in Pennsylvania is a university. That's where I'm originally from. Konstantinos Papadakis is a guest of the Modern Greek Studies program, as I said, and the person who told me about this recital is somebody who I first encountered on the radio, as a matter of fact, and she hosts a program on WEFT, which is a community station in Champaign, and Marina Terkorafi. Did I say that somewhat right?
Yes.
And I'm forgetting the name of your show, though.
Mare Nostrum.
Mare Nostrum, which means?
Which means our sea in Latin, and it was what the Romans used to call the Mediterranean. So it's a show about Mediterranean music and culture, and that airs on WEFT every 2 weeks. I've been doing it for just over 2 years. I was thrilled to find out you're a listener, because, of course, when you're on the radio, you don't really know who's out there listening.
No, I always like putting faces to people, people who do listen. So what's the occasion for bringing him here? Is this part of a larger program?
Well, the Modern Greek Studies program was established about 4 years ago on this campus as its own entity and started offering classes 3 years ago. And we're on the verge of employing our first full-time faculty member to take over the program. And this is like a coming of age in the sense that part of our mission, as we see it, is not just to offer modern Greek language courses, which is, of course, probably the heart of any foreign culture program, but to help our students here and the community become acquainted with cultures they may know less about, they may have only stereotypical representations of. And recently we hosted the first Champagne Greek Film Festival that was 10 days ago at the Art Theatre, brought in Greek films subtitled in English that would not be shown in this country otherwise. And I'm very, very excited about the kind of music that Konstantinos is playing. I should mention that his expertise, of course, he has great expertise and strengths in classical music. You know, he's known for his performances of the Romantics. And I insisted that what I wanted him to put together for this concert was actually to be pieces by contemporary living Greek composers or inspired Greek themes. And so I pushed him to go in that direction and put together a program that you cannot hear anywhere else. Some of these pieces have been written specifically for Konstantinos, who is personal friends with some of the composers. And I feel that that connection also helps, bring out the sense of the music even better.
How did you find him?
We kind of anticipated this question, so this is interesting. Konstantinos and I were classmates at primary school, ages 6 and 7. We grew up in the same town, and we lost track of each other by the time we were in university. The last time we came across each other, I was also studying piano in Athens, as well as doing my undergraduate degree, and he was performing already a protégé, I might say, of Manos Hatzidakis, whose piece we heard earlier. And I heard him in this live performance, which was choreographed by Dimitris Papayoannou, who was later, this was in 96, and in 2004, Papayoannou choreographed the whole show that you saw for the opening and closing of the Athens Olympics. So 8 years earlier, Konstantinos, this was the year before he himself left to come to the U.S., and I saw him in that live performance of music by Hatzidakis, choreographed by Papayoannou, a very inspirational piece in an old electricity station in Athens, that's right. Yeah. It was extremely ambient. And then I didn't know where he was playing anymore or where he was based. And 2 years ago, through my involvement with Modern Greek Studies, I realized that he was performing some of this music, and I contacted him, and we reunited after not having seen each other in more than 15 years.
Wow, you never know where past connections will come together.
Yes, it was very exciting.
So, Konstantinos, since, as Marina said, you have a strong affinity for the standard classical romantics. How much of a stretch was this for you to learn some of this music? Or are these pieces that were in your repertory anyway?
Not at all. I mean, I try and I have to. I feel I have to play everything from Baroque to today. So my repertoire actually includes many of living composers. The stretch for this was a connection to do not only with Greek composers, but also other composers who will be inspired for this event. And it took some time to decide. I've changed the program many times because, you know, I end up with great pieces from many people. And I've changed the program a few times to the one that I'm playing today. So it was a little bit difficult to come up with that final selection.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to guess from the looking at the names, which ones are Greek. So Nikos Kalkotas.
Kalkotas, yes.
I assume is a Greek person. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that Jorge Villa Vicencio Grossman is not.
I guess not.
He's Peruvian. And Kalkotas was a student of
Schoenberg.
Of Schoenberg. Mm. So he's one of the older generation of Greeks. He's not alive anymore. He had a pretty sad life. But
Mr.
His music
was undiscovered for much after he died.
And the piece by Grossman is actually a world premiere happening on this concert. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then we mentioned Manos Hadjidakis and Panagiotis Theodosio. Did I say
Theodosio,
that?
Theodosio.
Minas Bourboudakis, which is a U.S. premiere you're going to be giving. And then Robert Maggio, who is, I don't think is Greek.
Yeah, he's based in Philadelphia. And he's professor of composition and the chairman at Westchester University.
At Westchester, which is probably how you knew him. I wanted to, I don't know what all these pieces were. You gave me a CD that has 10 things on, so I just made some notes here of things that I'd like our audience to hear, and I'd like them to hear a little bit of what is track 3 on this CD, where I wrote, it starts dramatically, it gets kind of dissonant, and then suddenly it becomes very pretty in an unexpected way. What is this piece?
This is Theodoros Antoniou. The title is Prelude and Toccata. And unfortunately, that's what I was talking about before, that I've changed the program. I did program to play a piece of his today, but I've changed my mind because I did play him in Philadelphia a few weeks ago. So I wanted to present more people.
So in other words, you wanted to make it hard on yourself.
No, not at all. Not at all. I had many great pieces and I wanted to play them all, and it was impossible. This piece is from a live recording, a live performance that when I play all of his work, the piano work, and later I record that.
That's the CD that's about to come out. Is that right?
Yeah, it's not released yet. Mm-hmm. The title is Prelude and Toccata. The prelude is, I guess, the dissonant part you've heard. And then the toccata is a more virtuosic.
Well, let's have a sample of this. It's a playing of Konstantinos Papadakis from very recently. He's going to be playing tonight at 7:30 in the Memorial Room of Smith Music Hall on the University of Illinois campus, a presentation of the Modern Greek Studies program here at the University of Illinois. Thank you. That's a little bit of the Prelude and Toccata by Theodor Antoniou, who was a composer performed here by Konstantinos Papadakis, who is professor at the New England Conservatory in Boston and a guest of the Modern Greek Studies program here at the University of Illinois, to perform a recital of contemporary compositions by Greek composers and also by some non-Greek composers who are influenced by things Greek in one way or another. It's a 7:30 start on that. And that sounded like a fistful of notes.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Is it difficult as it sounds?
I think it's more difficult. it shouldn't sound difficult, but...
It doesn't sound like you're working hard at
right.
it. But it sounds like if I were to work at it, my fingers would fall off. But then,
well, that's how I. Let me put it this way. That's how I feel after I play it.
I'm looking for your hands. You do have
no,
fingers.
I have the fingers.
Yeah, they're
now,
still
yes.
on there. Yeah. Okay. Is this one of the pieces that I know it was at some point. It was new to you, but was it new to you recently?
No. I played that. It was a recital by Athens Concert Hall. They invited me to play all Theodore's piano work. It was a 2 hours and 20 minutes recital. It was a marathon. That time I thought I lost all my fingers.
But this is the fellow you've recorded his works for
the
on
the day after I record all his music. But I did play because this is one of my favorite pieces. It's short and it's all of his language and his piano writing, it's in those 5 minutes very clear. I did play that in Philadelphia. That was the Contemporary Piano 3 that I did a month ago. And I scheduled to play it here as well. But unfortunately, I changed my mind because I wanted to put George piece, Grossman's piece.
Mm-hmm. So I said Jorge, but he says
yes,
George.
Yes.
A piece called The Persephone's Idol, which will be a world premiere tonight. And we don't have a sample of that because that would be giving things
exactly.
away. And there won't be a premiere anymore. But you're doing a recital. I mean, the recital on campus is tonight, but you're going up to Chicago also because this is not only a presentation of the Modern Greek Studies program, but in cooperation with the National Hellenic Museum and the Greek Consulate of Chicago?
That is correct. On Thursday at 7 p.m. At the National Hellenic Museum in Chicago, Konstantinos will be performing the same program. Since this is the flagship campus of the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, we see our mission as catering for the entire state. It would be a pity to bring, I think this is actually Konstantinos' first trip to Illinois. Mm-hmm. I was very excited to find out that he's been in the country much longer than me, but he hasn't actually ever made it out to Illinois. So I felt that it would be a pity not to include a stop in Chicago, where there is a significant Greek community that would also, and also a significant musical community that would be interested in this kind of music. I must say, I've attended some of the rehearsals, and it is impressive. Konstantinos has to stand up during part of the performance. He will do weird things to the piano, weird interactions. I mean, these are not things that we're used to seeing at classical music recitals. And I think that was when you asked him earlier, what was it challenging? I think part of it is the integration of you're not just playing with your fingers anymore. Any contemporary pianists know that. You start plugging the chords, you start combining sounds that may be coming from other sources, as in one of the tracks that I think we'll listen in a moment.
Well, we're going to listen to one now that is will be the U.S. premiere of this piece by Minas Bourboudakis. ROAI3 What are those letters?
Roe means
Is that
flow.
Actually a name?
Yeah.
Okay.
It means flows.
Okay, because it's capitalized here, so right. I didn't know that. For piano and synthesized and electroacoustic sound. So it's just you there, and you'll be playing a recording?
Me and the recording sounds. No, I'm not. I just play a CD, and which I synchronize with my playing. The sounds are coming from the piano and the microphone.
So this includes some of these you inside the piano sounds?
No. Those extended techniques are just few. That was the contemporary piano too I did once a few years ago. Maggio's piece has some of those techniques.
Tonight?
Yes, and Theodosiu.
Well, let's give a sample, give a listen to a portion of this piece by Minas Bourboudakis in a performance by Konstantinos Papadakis, which I gather was pretty recent, here on Live and Local. That's a portion of the third movement, actually, it's nearly all of the third movement of music by Minas Bourboudakis called Roy 3 for piano, synthesized, and electric acoustic sounds. And this will be a U.S. premiere given tonight at 7:30 at Smith Memorial Hall by Konstantinos Papadakis, who is a guest with us this week from New England Conservatory in Boston. And I wanted to play just one very, very brief piece and very, very fast piece. Is this on tonight's program? This is our track 3 on your CD. Track 4, sorry.
Yes, that's the fourth suite by Nikos Kalkotas. And the first movement is another toccata, very short.
And toccata, they tend to be rather... Virtuosity. Challenging pieces.
Yeah, well, that's
the idea, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bach wrote an awful lot of those, and they just tend to fly.
Explore the techniques and the piano.
Well, here you are showing off for all of our listeners here. you have it, a toccata from a larger piece, a suite by Nikos Skalkotas, who is a Greek composer. He's one of two who isn't alive anymore. In fact, he lived a rather short life, about 45 years early in the century. So this is from a program called the Contemporary Piano, Impressions from Greece, and several Greek composers represented here, a world premiere, a U.S. premiere, and a couple of pieces by non-Greek composers, nonetheless inspired by things Greek, and all performed tonight at 7:30 in the Memorial Room of Smith Memorial Hall by Konstantinos Papadakis as a presentation of the Modern Greek Studies program at the University of Illinois, and instigated here by Marina Terkarafi, who, along with Konstantinos, my guest here on Live and Local. I hope all things go well for the recital. It sounds like you've got things cut out for your fingers here, plenty to work on. And congratulations on meeting the challenge of a lot of new pieces that Marina set for you.
Thank you.
Nice of you to do that. I heard you say earlier you took piano studies, but I'll bet these are not pieces you would tackle yourself.
No.
She's very accomplished pianist, I may add.
But when Konstantinos' career was taking off and he went on to win a few prizes at competitions was about the time I switched over to linguistics. So now I can merely just about follow and turn the pages for him at the concert tonight.
Will you be the page turner?
I will be.
That should be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, these pieces are so different. I've never seen anything or heard anything like it. I'm very, very excited that we are giving the campus audience this opportunity to see new faces and new aspects of what Greece is like today and what the artistic production that can come out of Greece. I believe it's important.
For more information on this program and others from Modern Greek Studies, you can go to moderngreek.illinois.edu. Thanks, both of you, very much for coming in.
Pleasure.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. WILL invites you to meet Alan J.W. Bell, director and producer of England's longest-running television comedy, Last of the Summer Wine. Don't miss Alan's behind-the-scenes stories and video. You can join us at Campbell Hall on Friday, March 23rd at 5:30 p.m. A $50 per person donation is requested. To make a pledge and receive admission as your thank you, phone 217-244-9455. Stay tuned for our next guests. They are pianist Ian Hobson, horn player Bernhard Scully, and guest violinist Andres Cardenas, who are giving a recital tomorrow night at Smith Music Hall. You're listening to Live and Local. That was a performance by violinist Andres Cardenas with pianist Luz Manriquez from a wonderful CD that's been out for quite some years now. It's called Made in the USA, and as you might expect, it's all American music on here by a lot of composers you probably haven't heard of. In fact, some I hadn't heard of. This was a fellow I'd heard of but hadn't heard much of his music. His name is Cecil Burley, and we heard three of his pieces published together, a valse burlesque, a summer idyll or idyll, and then a ghost dance. And I played that music because one of my next guests here on Live and Local is Andres Cardenas himself, who was a guest artist this week at the University of Illinois. He's a, until pretty recently, concertmaster of the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra and is now working as a solo artist and conductor and chamber musician. And as a chamber musician, he's going to be working with the pianist Ian Hobson and horn player Bernhard Scully, who are also with us on the show right now. They're giving a recital tomorrow night together at Smith Recital Hall on the University of Illinois campus, a 7:30 start. And I guess first, I should say congratulations to Bernhard for becoming the official horn professor at the University of Illinois.
Thank
for
you very much.
2 years. You've been the interim.
Yep.
And that just
visiting.
Happened a couple of weeks ago. Visiting, is that was that
yeah,
technical
that's
term?
What it was called.
And welcome to Andres Cardenas.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So you have a relationship of some standing here with Ian Hobson.
We've been longtime friends, and of course we've collaborated many, many times in various different genres as a conductor for each other, and we've made several recordings together, and of course we've played a lot of chamber music and the recitals together.
What made you decide to leap away from the Pittsburgh Symphony out of a pretty plum job to do these other things?
Well, I think my shelf life was up. I just felt that it was time to move on to other things that I really wanted to do, and I never saw myself as a career concertmaster. You know, I wanted to be a complete musician, and I did it for 21 years, and it was time to do something else.
21 years with Pittsburgh or elsewhere in
well,
Pittsburgh?
Well, a total of 25 years altogether. I had 3 years in the Utah Symphony as concertmaster and 1 year in San Diego and 21 years with the Pittsburgh Symphony. I felt, you know, that was almost half my life, and I thought that was enough.
Well, since I haven't had in this studio the a concertmaster, either present or former, of one of America's major orchestras before, let me ask you, what are some of the challenges of being a concertmaster of a major orchestra, and how, and what's the importance of that role? It's a term that people hear a lot, and I'm willing to bet that most people have no idea what it means to be a concertmaster.
Well, there are many, many facets of the job. First and foremost is you're kind of the face of the orchestra. You know, you're kind of the focus outside of the conductor. So when the conductor isn't around, if he's out of town or doing other things, then you're basically the sort of the beacon of the orchestra. And so that requires a huge amount of effort because really, you know, you have to go to a lot of fundraisers and appear at a lot of functions, represent the orchestra in various venues and under different conditions. And of course, then every year you perform with the orchestra as a soloist. And I, of course, played not only concertmaster, but I ran the Pittsburgh Symphony Chamber Orchestra, which I was music director for 11 years.
Which is quite an unusual role for a concertmaster.
Yeah, but it was created for me to kind of showcase my abilities in various different areas of conducting violin and viola, chamber music, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, I also conducted the orchestra every year. So really what happened was that I started outgrowing the situation, you know, because I was doing everything except be the music director. And so it was just time to move on.
Well, coming back just to the role of the concertmaster, you told me some things that I didn't necessarily know about being the face of the orchestra. But what about when the orchestra is playing? What do the other musicians use you for lack of a better term? Or, you know, what are the responsibilities of the concertmaster in the midst of performance?
Well, there's a certain hierarchy that kind of occurs. It's not a hierarchy of position so much as it is of following. It's my job to basically interpret what the conductor is doing. In other words, you have conductors that come in from France or Switzerland or England or American conductors, and everybody has a different style, a different background, a different school that they come from. It's my job to basically interpret what they want and how they want to do it. And from that point, all the principals around me kind of follow my interpretation of what the conductor is doing. From there, all the section players follow their leaders. So not everybody can be looking at me all the time. If there's any problem in a concert, I'm usually the person that they would look to for organization or to establish security in the orchestra.
What kind of problem are we talking about?
Well, let's say that the conductor gets lost. Or, you know, the conductor can make a mistake.
That would never happen, Ian, would it?
No. Not to Ian, it wouldn't. It wouldn't happen to him, but it's happened to others. And so for security and for, you know, balance in the orchestra and all that kind of thing, you know, I will move my head or I'll move my body in such a way to make sure that everybody is together, that we're on the same page. And, you know, it's really no different than any kind of team. You know, it's nothing against the conductor. It's just simply if something goes wrong, you want to help the conductor. We don't want to have something happen in the concert that would either reflect badly on us or the conductor. So, like I said, this hierarchy sort of works in a sense as a team, and each person is responsible for their own role in this. And my role happened to be, you know, to help the conductor as much as I could, to support the conductor, his ideas, his vision for the piece. A lot of times a conductor would come in and not knowing exactly how to do something with a string instrument, but he'll describe what he's looking for, and then it's my job to offer a suggestion to how to achieve that. So really the position requires somebody extremely knowledgeable. I think the most difficult part of the job was playing within the texture of the orchestra, meaning that you're kind of a member of the section, so you can't ever stick out. But on the other hand, you're the solo violinist. So when you're playing something like Scheherazade or you're playing Ein Heldenleben by Strauss, you have to move back and forth from a solo kind of playing to a blending kind of playing. And to make those changes on, you know, on the fly is actually the most difficult part of the job, because really you have to be very present as a soloist. But then at the same time, it's like you have to change your technique instantly to remain within the texture of the rest of the orchestra. So it takes a certain amount of ability to be able to do that. You got to have nerves of steel to also do that, because, you know, when you're playing in front of your peers and your colleagues all the time, they're very judgmental and you know, they're always thinking, well, he's the leader and he's getting paid more money, and so you better produce, you know.
And listen
so
to that mistake he just made or something.
Huh?
And listen to that mistake he just made.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's a lot of pressure to do well all the time. And of course, you want to represent the orchestra well, and so there's a considerable amount of pressure.
Speaking of people who have to have nerves of steel, we happen to have an orchestral horn player here with us, Bernhard Scully. So just out of curiosity, from the horn section, how much do you lean on the concertmaster, and for what?
Oh, it's all the things you said. I mean, it's I think that the connection, at least that I have, we're in the back of the orchestra. So we're always, you know, late. You know? So it's like oftentimes if we just simply follow the conductor, if you look at the conductor and we react to that, we're late. And so much of what I feel like I have to do is maybe more immediately with the woodwinds and with the other brass, but also with the strings. You actually, there's a lot of even physical connection, you know, to watch, like Brahms' First Symphony or something. I mean, you just have to, you know, look over there and watch, and I'm watch the bow, and it's, you know, so he's about the same as the conductor to me, you know, as in the back of the orchestra. It's you know, thank you,
Ian,
for doing what you do.
As long as we're doing this sort of round robin thing, and I got in this topic, you know, as a sometime conductor myself, I often feel a little confused about the role of the concertmaster, and I find it a little disconcerting sometimes when I'm looking right in the orchestra and here's the principal violist looking squarely at the concertmaster and not as me at me as the conductor, and I think, what's going on here? What do you how do you balance that as the other leader of the orchestra?
Well, you know, I've noticed that same thing with the eyes.
It's weird,
the
isn't
eyes,
it?
The eye contact between the principal cellist and the concertmaster, or the second violin principal and the viola, very often if they happen to be sitting in contiguous sections, you know. But it's very natural because they're actually playing it. We are kind of administering from afar, whether if we can administer in a musical, artistic way, an inspirational way, all the better. But we're giving hand signals, basically. And they are playing instruments and playing, in the best sense, chamber music with each other in the sections. So it doesn't bother me if I see them looking at each other rather than looking at me, as long as they you know, as long as the result is good ensemble and it's really the aspect of a conductor not being a dictator, as they sometimes used to be in the old days, but you know, a principal among equals who's as I said, inspiring the best out of the players in front of you.
Well, and the conductor is among the chamber players too, just with a rather different role. And the one who doesn't make any sound.
The one who doesn't make any sound.
Unless you happen to be a grunter, and then that's a whole other topic. Well, speaking of chamber music, that's what you all are here to talk about a little bit more and play for us. Let me mention first that we have support for our show today from the Music Shop, celebrating 51 years of service to music education, now offering private lesson instruction for students of all ages. They also feature guitars, amplifiers, digital pianos, software, and sound equipment in the Pro Sound Center at 27 East Market View Drive, Market View Plaza, Champaign, or at themusicshop.com. Ian, talk a little bit about the assembly of this program that's happening tonight. There's a little bit with you and Bernie, there's a little bit with you and Andres, and then there's you all together.
Well, the guiding light of this program is the piece that Brahms wrote, known as the Horn Trio, for violin, French horn, and piano. And it's a great, profound piece, a very difficult piece, and I thought of the pleasure that it would be to play with these two gentlemen at this piece, because I think I've played it with Andres a couple of times, and you know we think it's a rare and wonderful event when you get to play the Horn Trio and you feel good about it all around, and that's what we're going to have here. And so that piece I really wanted to do. I was looking forward to playing chamber music for the first time with Bernard. And when I invited Andres to come to play, it was to play this piece, but also then we decided to play the Kreutzer Sonata of Beethoven, which we've played before. And then Bernard has offered some pieces which I didn't know before, some melodies by Gounod, and Saint-Saëns Mouvement de Concert.
Morceau de Concert.
Morceau de Concert.
Yeah, these are two pieces I've actually played myself.
For the Gounod melodies?
No, I have never played those, but I played the Morceau, and on my sophomore recital, I played the Brahms
Trio.
Trio, which is just splendid. So now I get to hear a little bit about how it really should go. It's a four-movement piece. And we're going to give away the very ending, but that's all you get of tomorrow night's recital, which starts at 7:30. It's a free program at Smith Hall. And it's Andres Cardenas, guest of the University of Illinois campus, Ian Hobson on the piano, and Bernard Scully on the horn. And they're live on Live and Local. Thank you. That's how it's done, folks. Andres Cardenas, violin, Bernhard Scully, horn, and Ian Hobson, piano. That was the final movement of the trio for those instruments by Johannes Brahms. It's just a fabulous, fabulous piece of music. And it will close the recital that these gentlemen are giving tomorrow night at 7:30 at Smith Music Hall. It will include some six melodies for horn and piano by Charles Gounod, and the Morceau de Concert of Camille Saint-Saëns, also for horn and piano, and then the wonderful Kreutzer Sonata for violin and piano by Beethoven, and then intermission, and then you get the three of them doing this piece together. And you also get to hear Ian play on an actual piano tonight instead of our clavin over here. And I thought you made it sound pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's such a fabulous piece. Is there another piece of that combination?
There are a couple. Have you done the Ligeti?
No, I haven't done the Ligeti, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's hard.
George Ligeti. George Ligeti.
Frank Bridge or something
yeah.
like that?
Yeah, there's also a couple British. There's that. Who's the other guy? There's not.
Yehudi Weiner also.
Really? Yeah.
A piece for the same combination. I actually studied composition with him.
Really?
Briefly.
It's a good piece?
Yeah. Very good piece. Very good piece. Very different than this.
John Harbison has a piece called Twilight Music, which is really great. Have you played that one?
No. I think that originally was one of the things we talked about.
Yeah, it's too much.
Yeah, a lot of rehearsal time.
Oh, we don't want to rehearse. Right?
But the Ligeti was written in the, I think it was the early 80s, written for Herman Bauman. And it was actually dedicated to the Brahms trio. But if you listen to it, you would never know that. But the reason about this trio is it was actually written for the natural horn. Even though you would never suspect that from how chromatic
this
it is.
This trio.
It is.
Yeah.
There's actually a great recording of it. I don't know if you've heard the recording of Lowell Greer playing on a natural. It's the only one I know
of. No.
Yeah. I actually played it with him.
Oh, you did?
Like that, yeah. I played it with him in Ann Arbor.
In natural horn?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Many years ago.
It's my favorite recordings, but no one ever played it. It takes a lot. Really, you have to have full command of the natural horn to do a piece like this. But what Ligeti did is he wrote in the very modern style as he does, and he wrote a lot of parts that are for natural horn, but in a modern vein.
It's kind of a natural horn means horns without vowels.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The horns like without using vowels in the harmonic series. So a lot of the strange intonations that you get from like an untempered clavier, he wanted to get from the horn. But yet it's similar to the natural instrument that Brahms had written for. That's the dedication for it. So.
Although I just did a performance of the Bach B minor Mass with Amsterdam Baroque soloist, mm-hmm. and they had a rather large natural horn, and I personally think that the natural horn is the best argument for vowels that was ever made.
I heard that performance went quite well.
Yeah, it did. Oh, yeah.
I wish I could have seen it.
Yeah, no, it did, as best as one can do with that instrument. But it's really it's really challenging to play. Yeah. I'd love to hear these other pieces sometime. So next time you guys are back. There's your assignment. Well, it sounds like a great recital, and I appreciate your coming in to let us know about it. And Mr. Cardenas, pleasure to meet
you. Thank you, pleasure.
And we'll be going out here with another from this CD of yours, made in the USA, in just a moment. Illinois Public Media is 90 years old. We'll kick off a year of memories and celebrations with a visit by Andrea Seabrook, NPR congressional correspondent. You can join Andrea and the WYLL news team for a wine and cheese reception at Campbell Hall on Wednesday, April 11th. Tickets are $25 a person. Call 217-333-7300 for reservations. You're listening to 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translators, W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR and Classical Music for Central Illinois. WYLL is, of course, a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois, and we have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine Urbana with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m., in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is at thecorkscrew.com. The piece we're going to close with, featuring Andres Cardenas, is actually a piece that many years ago used to be the theme for a show that we aired here on our companion station, WYLL-TV. It was called The Silver Screen, and it was hosted by Tom Gubeck, and this was the theme music. It's by William Bolcom. It's called Graceful Ghost.